Welcome to the Cutter's Notch Podcast, a program created by Michael DeCamp, the author of Abandon Hope, a Cutter's Notch novel. Recorded in the Cutter's Notch Studios, this podcast is focused on all things creative, with special forays into books and matters of faith. Join Michael as he catches up with an author, a songwriter, a painter, a comedian, or anyone working or supporting a creative endeavor. So turn up the volume, listen, and catch up on what's happening in Cutter's Notch.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of the Cutter's Notch podcast. I'm Michael DeCamp, your host, and I'm joined today by our co-host, but also guest today, and that would be Angela DeCamp. Hello, Angela.
Hello, Michael.
Angela is my oldest daughter, and she is a guest because she is quite a talented painter, and so we're going to talk a little bit about that whole painting process and the concepts around creating visual art. And so that's a little bit hard to, you can't just show someone on a podcast what your paintings look like or your drawings, but we can discuss the whole process and the concepts and how you've, what your creative process is like. Now, before I get into that, I do want to do my usual book that has meant something to me. The book that I want to share is The Shack by William Young, William P. Young. Angela, have you read The Shack?
No, I have not, Michael.
And The Shack is it's quite an interesting story. It's a novel. But I think its intent is to help us to learn really what it means to experience God's grace, and also really kind of how hard it is for us to have grace on other people who maybe in our minds don't deserve it. It's kind of a tough, got some tough edges in it. And it will shake, if you're someone of a faith background and you haven't read The Shack, it will kind of shake your world a little bit when it comes to concepts of how you might in your mind envision God, because he presents himself in the Trinity in this story in different forms. And I won't spoil that by trying to share it, but you should pick up the book. I'll read to you the blurb on the back. It says, Mackenzie Allen Phillips' youngest daughter, Missy, has been abducted during a family vacation, and evidence that she may have been brutally murdered is found in an abandoned shack deep in the Oregon wilderness. 4 years later, in the midst of his great sadness, Mac receives a suspicious note, apparently from God, inviting him back to that shack for a weekend. Against his better judgment, he arrives at the shack on a wintry afternoon and walks back into the darkest nightmare, or his darkest nightmare. What he finds there will shake Mac's world forever. In a world where religion seems to grow increasingly irrelevant, the shack wrestles with the timeless question, where is God in a world so filled with unspeakable pain? The answers Mac gets will astound you and perhaps transform you as much as it did him. You'll want everyone you know to read this book. And I got to say, I read it. I was probably a little bit skeptical when I picked it up, but when I read it, the story really did suck me in. And the perceptions and the complicated way that God deals with us as a people was something that was really kind of a mind stretcher for me. It really stretched my faith and stretched my understanding of things. So anyway, that's The Shack. I would recommend it. If you haven't read The Shack, pick it up. William P. Young, I'm sure you can get it in most bookstores. It was kind of a hit.
It was a popular one. I remember when that came out.
Yeah, they made a movie on it a couple of years ago too. And the movie was good, but it wasn't quite to the level of the book.
Is it ever really?
Not really. So Angela, how about you? You got any interesting books you want to share with us about today?
Well, I don't know that we have enough time to talk about all of the books. I'm just reading one, a series right now, but I'll probably skip that one for my current favorite, which is The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath. That one's probably my all-time favorite.
And what's The Bell Jar about?
So it's fictional, but it's sort of based off of Sylvia's actual experience. So she was a poet. And a lot of her writing is very poetic, extremely descriptive, but in a very, it's hard to describe. It's just beautiful writing. But she struggled a lot with mental health, like depression and all of that. And this story is sort of set in a time when mental health wasn't as talked about or as seriously taken as it is now. And it was her dealing with going through a depression that she couldn't explain. She had no idea how to deal with. And it doesn't sound like a fun read. I'm not describing it well, but it was, it really grabbed me. And it was something that, even though I have my own mental health that I address, it makes you feel like you're experiencing something completely new just along with the main character. And I just thought it was beautiful.
Okay. Well, Angela, I appreciate you being on as a guest today. Those of you who have listened in the past may have recognized her from our last podcast because she joined as a co-host in our interview with Linda Mansfield. But I wanted to bring Angela in as an actual guest as well because this podcast is all about creativity. And Angela is one of the most creative people that I know. And that I'm not just saying that because I'm her father. I think she truly is a very creative artist. And I'll say this, I think her mom and I recognized that in her very, very young, when she was very small and she began to draw pictures. When other kids were drawing stick figures with no detail, she's drawing whole portraits of scenes with multiple people and details on the wall and the woodwork and the chairs and the clothes and people's expressions on their faces that were well beyond anything that other kids that I'd seen of her age. So we saw it early and we began to kind of allow her to explore that early on. So Angela, at what point did you kind of realize that you had this, like this more than just an interest, but kind of an ability?
It's sort of a complicated question because I feel like I've had a natural aptitude for it just for creating my whole life. So it's not like I can really pinpoint a time. Like you guys are describing, like, I remember when she was just a tot and she was drawing fingers. I'm like, I don't remember that because I honestly don't have the capability of remembering that. But I think that once I started, when people started telling me that I was drawing really well or that they really liked my sketching, and because I enjoyed it so much, I think that's when I kind of wanted to take off with it and just pursue it a little more than some of the other subjects.
But now you're a painter, right? And we'll get into that in a little bit. What was some of your earliest art forms? Was it always drawing or was it other kinds of things that you liked to do?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that I'm just a painter because I don't feel like I'm a painter, or just primarily, I guess maybe that's what I usually do, but when you're a kid, you start out with like, you know, a pencil or, finger painting. I remember sitting at the kitchen table doing finger painting with mom and even, drawing pictures on the bus windows with the mist that was on the, I'm sure you did this where you'd kind of pound your fist into the window and you put little dots above it. It makes it look like a baby foot, just kind of playing around with creativity. I mean, all of those little experiences, I think, sort of count as art. But, you know, I did a lot of different things. I played around with a lot of different things.
What do you remember about when you were in art class in school? What were some of your favorite, say, art teachers, maybe art projects, things like that coming up through school?
Gosh, that's a really good question. I had a lot of really, I think I lucked out with a lot of really great art teachers who let me play with it. And I think that's really important, especially with art, is giving people parameters, but also letting them kind of play. When you make something fun, it ends up feeling like less pressure. I mean, I could probably list out everybody's names, but I honestly, the first thing that popped in my head was all the teachers who let me scribble on my homework that they weren't art teachers, but like would let me doodle on my math in the corner or kind of let me express myself in maybe an English class with a poster that was a little different. So I would say probably like my elementary school teachers were really great. I had some, Franklin Township School Corporation, I'm going to say that they have had really great art teachers up until probably I was in high school. And that's all I will say about that.
Okay. Well, we won't dig into that one. When you were talking about they let you play with it. So in the visual arts, when it comes to drawing and painting, I know that there are certain techniques and skills. Have there been times when people have tried to give you rules for how to do things?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that having rules in place is also can be really helpful. It's just about knowing who you're teaching and what level they're at. Like when you're really little, like, yeah, some rules help, but being able to just kind of explore and try different things, I think is really important. Once I started getting just a little bit older, like, you know, middle school and high school, like you'll learn specific techniques, I don't know if everybody will ever use them again, but you know, sometimes you use them just for a learning purpose, for learning itself. But I remember when I was in high school, I had an art teacher who had like a very specific method of shading. And, it was a good method, but it was a very irritating one to learn. And we weren't really allowed to shade in any other way. We could only use her method. And so I remember being really frustrated with the rule. Like I understood and I respected the fact that it was a good method, but I wasn't allowed to do anything any other way. So that was, as far as rules go, that was kind of a frustrating rule.
Artists oftentimes are probably stereotyped as people who don't really like rules. Did that play into any of the frustration you might've had that with that teacher in that case, you think, or is it just that you really just wanted to experiment?
Honestly, I think that people don't like artists don't like rules. I think that can apply to just people. People don't like rules, you know, yeah, in a lot of different areas. It depends on the context. For this one, it was very much just, I had learned other techniques in other places and I took some, you guys were very kind and let me take some Saturday school art classes with the Heron School of Art program in Indianapolis. And so they taught me a lot of different ways, like hatching and just different ways of shading. And so I was excited to go to my high school class and use some of those. And when I was limited, after I'd already learned all these different ways of doing it, it was aggravating. But in the end, you know, even though I was forced to learn this particular method, it ended up being good. I was glad I knew it, and it did take a little time to get it. So yeah, it's hard to describe without you knowing exactly what I'm talking about, but
yeah. Well, I'm sure that, you know, here you'd been to these other classes that are tied in with a local school of art, which was part of the IUPUI program at the, well, Indiana University, Purdue University of Indianapolis, IUPUI. Has the Saturday school that you mentioned. Do they still have that?
They do, but they don't have it for adults anymore. I should give background on this since we're talking about it. So the Heron School of Art and Design, they're local and they're awesome, but they had for years and years, this program called Saturday School. So anybody who I think was 12 or older could sign up for any of these classes. They're like 3 hours every Saturday, and you could do portraiture, you could do sculpture or ceramics, or, you know, there's just an endless amount of classes. It just depended on the teachers that they had to be able to teach them. And all of these were either grad students or they were actual students at the School of Arts. They were like learning art very seriously. And so I was lucky to have kind of an insight into what art school could be, or like kind of a window into it. And I think I took some of those classes for several years.
Mm-hmm. In fact, you and I took one together one time.
We did. That was fun.
Yeah. I think, was that basic drawing or was that?
Yeah, I think it was basic drawing. Because I did basic drawing twice. I did that one when I was 12 and I wasn't really taking it seriously. And then I think I took it again at 13 when we did it together.
That was a lot of fun. I learned a lot.
You actually had kind of an aptitude for drawing. Like, I think that if you would have really had that opportunity as a kid and growing up, that you could have actually really.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Just learning the, you have to go buy your supplies before you start the class. Mm-hmm. And you buy all these different pencil leads with different darknesses and lightnesses.
Different qualities.
And then you buy these different kinds of erasers. Mm-hmm. And the technique of using an eraser to create shading, smudging, basically putting the pencil down and then smudging it.
For a lot from that class.
That was actually a lot of fun. And then I always looked at when you're trying to draw someone's face, that you would put the eyes towards the top of the head, but it's actually more in the middle, which was really kind of an eye-opening thing. So
that was something that a lot of people like kind of learn in college, but you don't really get taught a lot in middle school and high school is in middle school and high school, it seems like education, but for art, and this is probably changed, maybe talk to an art teacher. So don't quote me on this, but when I was growing up, it seemed like it was all about learning how to draw. But when you go to college or when you're in an atmosphere that we just described, it's all about learning how to see. It's almost like you can kind of, I don't know, sort of marry those two concepts. If you learn how to, like how you're actually looking at something, because in your brain, you make up, your brain tells you things that you should just know about the way things look. Oh, well, eyes are in the top of your head. But if you're actually looking at somebody to the very top of their head, to the very bottom of their chin, your eyes really are kind of in the middle. And there's other little things that you can learn, but it really is about learning how to look and pay attention.
And I think, as I recall, there's also you need to be able to see the negative space, mm-hmm. right? So yeah. I always want to focus on the eyes, right? But then there's the space between the eyes and the nose and between the nose and the mouth. There's this negative space that you need to be paying attention to mm-hmm. and be able to draw that too, right?
Yeah, it gives you more of a comprehensive when you look at all of that, right? Like you see it all the time. You just don't realize that you see it. But when you look at all of that kind of thing, I think it helps give you a more comprehensive view of the world around you.
Yeah. Now, did you find that being able to take those classes as a child, did you see that as an advantage towards your education in art?
I think I did at the time. I think I was a little arrogant, honestly.
Well, looking back on it now, though.
Yeah, no, I think it did. And I think, honestly, even if I didn't, well, I think I did gather quite a bit of skills that not everybody was exposed to. But even if I hadn't really gleaned anything skill-wise from those classes, I think just being in that atmosphere around people that were super passionate about it, that like were really trying to have a career in it at that young age, I think that just motivated me to explore more and learn more about art.
Mm-hmm. Well, then you went on to take an art program in college, right? So tell us a little bit about where you went to college and about the art program there.
Well, I went to Harding University, which is a private school in Arkansas. So if you're from Indianapolis, I would compare it to Butler. I always say it's the Butler of Arkansas. They're not really known for art. And I didn't, if I would have gone to probably the best school available to me at the time, I probably would have gone to Heron School of Art. And maybe if I would go back, I'd probably do that again. Sorry, Harding. If I had it to do over again, I'd probably go to Heron, save a little bit of money. But, the art program there, I got lucky with a few of my instructors at Harding
Tell us about your favorite ones. When you get to that, tell us about your favorite.
Okay, they're all my favorite. So that one's hard. Well, there's a couple that aren't. But I'm kind of jumping off here. But Harding had an art program. I got a bachelor's of fine art there. And I don't know. I started out as trying to be a graphic designer. I thought that was the way to go if I wanted to make money and be an artist. That's what I would have to do. And I turned out that I really hated it. And even though, I mean, I probably could have gone through and bit the bullet, but I really was passionate about painting and took a lot of painting classes, a lot of drawing classes, computer graphics. I don't know, all the classes. I took all the classes mm-hmm. and it was fun. I got to, I think probably my favorite, one of my fondest memories of college art was one of my teachers, Daniel Adams, which he was actually, he's a graphic designer, printmaker kind of classes and all of that. But we would go to different places and paint murals. So like we went to Ghana, West Africa as kind of a group, and we painted murals there. And later on, after I'd graduated, he was going to Tasmania to paint a mural in Tasmania. And I was like, hey, I'm in Australia. Can I join you? And he let me come and join, and I painted a mural with him in Australia. And so it was, I was able to have a lot of really interesting experiences going to Harding by doing that.
Now, you had another teacher there that I remember. I can't remember her name, but you seem to enjoy her class a lot. She did watercolors a lot, I think.
Beverly Austin.
Ah, yes, Beverly Austin. So you really enjoyed her class as well.
I did. I think she taught my watercolor class, and she also did some more of the advanced painting classes. I don't know. I had a lot of really great teachers, and I really can't skip over talking about Dr. Choate, because he was wonderful. He did art history. And I loved art history so much, I almost went into it for grad school because his class was just so fun. And then he also taught the first painting class as well. So I don't know if it's interesting to go into all of this stuff about my teachers and everything like that, but I had some really good ones there. I don't know that I would go back to Harding again, but for the experience that I had, it was nice.
Right. Now you had some experiences beyond just the painting and the drawing. You did also some woodworking and some work with sculpture, that type of thing.
Yeah, I took a sculpture class and a ceramics class. I think most of the time, especially like liberal arts and art school in general, like they make you take a lot of different classes to fulfill your degree, because they want you to, well, A, be well-rounded, but B, you know, maybe you find that you have more of an aptitude for ceramics, and so you can switch gear and go into that. I feel like I was pretty lucky, and I took photography and like all kinds of things. So. And
probably something else that you did that was you did comics for your newspaper,
oh,
right?
Yeah, no, I did. I did comics for the school newspaper. It was a good time.
That's got to be fun. It'd be fun to do.
It ended up not being that fun.
Really?
Well, Harding was. I don't fit really well into a box. And I say that because Harding is a Christian-based school. And a lot of my comics probably didn't, I had to redo them a lot. We'll just say that. I had to redo my comics.
You stretched the borders and then they pushed them back.
I might have pushed the envelope a little bit.
Just a little bit.
It's all right.
So what have you done with your art post-graduation? What else? You mentioned the mural in Tasmania, but what else have you done?
I burned it all.
Yeah. Burned all of it, yeah, except for what's hanging on the Cutter's Notch studio walls.
I graduated. So I spent actually a lot of my last year at college having, I guess, sort of panic attacks, which I really haven't experienced that much since graduating. But I was so paranoid about what I was going to do after I graduated. I'd wake up in the middle of the night and just freak out and call you guys. Don't know if you remember that. Maybe you've repressed it, but I have.
I don't know. Maybe your mother has.
She's over there in the other room nodding. I remember.
Your mother's in the Cutter's Notch green room.
She's like, I'm paying you back for that later. I was really paranoid. I didn't really know what to do. When I graduated, I kind of just took a 9-to-5 regular job that I wasn't really passionate about. And it was so unpleasant for me at the time that it almost kind of motivated me to make more art. So on Saturdays, I'd wake up early, I'd go up into the spare room and I would just paint. And I got really into doing like watercolor and pen kind of illustration sort of type work. And it just, the more I did it, the more it felt good. And I actually kind of felt like it was a little more mature work than what I did in college. College was a lot of just learning how to do it. But after college, it felt like, okay, now that I know how to do this, what do I want to say? Like, what am I experiencing and what do I want to share with the people that see it? And so I started doing a lot more of that just on my free time. And I said, sort of what I do now is whenever I have a chance, I have a spare room in my house that I have dedicated for, my studio. And whenever I get a chance, I go in there and sort of pour my spirit out.
Yeah. So what are the different, since you're into painting and drawing, what are the different, I guess, the formats? I mean, you get oil, there's watercolor, what are the different ways that you, and I've heard of acrylic, what are the ones you like? What are the ones that you enjoy doing the most? And then I guess, you know, we can talk a little bit about, you know, there's portraits and then there's landscapes and then there's other kinds. What are some of your different things that you like to do?
As far as mediums, I do oil on canvas quite a bit. It's what I spent a lot of energy doing in college. So it's a longer process for me to do that. And I'm learning a lot of different ways of doing it. Even now, years after graduating, it feels like it's been yesterday, but it's been a little while now. So I do a lot of oil painting and a lot of oil painting, like portraits and different landscapes and stuff. But I really got into this last year, I got into gouache. And it's hard to spell. So it's gouache. But it is a water-based paint that's very similar to watercolor. Except it's opaque. So watercolor paints are a little more transparent. You add water to them, they're more transparent. You build it up over layers. Gouache is the same kind of texture of paint with water. You add water to it and it kind of flows the same way, but it's completely opaque. So you kind of layer up a little differently. And I've been doing a lot of those over the last year because with my work, it has been my 9-to-5. It's just been really busy and it's hard to kind of make time to spend 6 hours in my studio like I used to. So I will be able to crank out a little gouache painting usually within a couple hours. I'll do it in some evening whenever I'm free.
Do you find that when you're able to kind of pour yourself into a project, whether it's a bigger one or whether it's one of the little gouache paintings, is this a way of kind of releasing maybe some of your inner emotions and feelings?
It definitely can serve as a catharsis. I discovered in college before I really kind of sought any kind of mental health assistance professionally, I would have a lot of emotion or I'd be really disappointed or I just would feel upset and I wouldn't know why. And I would just do a self-portrait. And once I did the self-portrait, I did feel better. Like I was like, oh, I put it here. I put the feelings here and now they're not in my, chest or my heart, you know? And so it did become a way of being able to deal with a lot of stress in life and being able to especially if I were frustrated about something, like if some boy hurt my feelings or didn't want to date me anymore or something, like I would come up with painting ideas or I would make paintings and I would be like, this will show him, you know, he'll see that. I don't know. It sounds sort of silly. Like when I think about it now and I think about some of the paintings I was coming up with when I was going through that, I'm embarrassed to think about it, but it was a way of dealing with pain.
Okay.
Now it's a way to just relax.
I've always been kind of amazed at your ability to put emotion into the faces that you either draw or you paint. I'm just envious of that skill that you have. As you mentioned, I could have had I had propensity to be someone who could draw. And I do play with it once in a while. I got a little cartoon character I do occasionally, and I've done some other little drawings and things over the years. But the ability you seem to just have a natural knack for creating emotion, even in pencil drawings, is just it's mind-blowing to me. So is that something that's always come natural for you, or did you have to work at that?
I think it's a little bit of both. When you first said that, there's a quote that I wish I could remember who said it, but one of my art teachers shared this quote with us and he said that hard work trumps natural ability every time. So I have a natural propensity for it. I have an inclination to create and it does come naturally to me. But if someone say who maybe didn't have the same natural gift, but who worked harder at it, if we were against each other, which no one's against each other here, then that person would probably end up doing better in the end. So I do have a natural gift for it and I have a natural interest, just like some people probably have a natural interest for math.
I can't imagine that. Why anybody?
I know, who are you? But I think that it's important to note that when you have a natural gift, you have to work at it or it's not going to go anywhere.
Okay. Very good. Very good. So where can people find your work these days?
The black market.
Yeah. Black market?
No, I mean, it's around. Right now I have a painting. It won't be up by the time this is released, but I have a painting at the Sierra Club in Indy. I'll be taking that down before you guys get a chance, so you should have seen it.
Oh, well.
It'll be up again. I do shows a few times a year, usually around Indianapolis. Otherwise, you can find my work online or at my studio.
Well, tell them where they can find it.
Well, How bad do they want to know, Mike?
They want to know really bad. The phones are ringing off the hook in the Cutter's Notch studio.
Mom, hurry, go grab it. I have a website. It's angeladecamp.com. And I have a Facebook page and an Instagram and a Twitter. And if you just search Angela DeCamp on all of those things, you should be able to find me relatively easily.
And your work is generally for sale.
Yeah. So. Well, and if you don't see a price, just ask. I mean, I'll sell you something. I do a lot of commission work some too. You know, I'm very careful about what I choose to take on now, as I think, I want to make sure that I provide a really good product for people who want it. But if anybody's interested in commission work, you know, you can always contact me through any of those avenues, I should say, as well. So.
Yeah, and you've done commission work in everything from pencil drawings to actual oil paintings, right?
Yeah. And I have like kind of a pay scale too. So, and I think a lot of people are really afraid of not being able to afford it or for hurting my feelings if I tell them a price and they're like, oh, I can't do it. I don't care. You know, if you can't do it, it's fine. But I do try to lead with, you know, hey, what is your budget for this? What are you really looking to spend? And if I can make something that will fit within that budget, then it's sort of a win-win.
Right. And then probably a little bit of, well, what are you looking for? Are you looking for, I mean, if you're thinking that they want a pencil drawing and then what they're really wanting is an oil painting, you know, they're.
Well, I mean, people will say like, hey, I don't want to spend any more than $200. Well, I'll be like, okay, well, this is what you can get for $200. And if they like that, then we go on. And if not, then, you know, it's totally no worries.
So if people go to your website, which is angeladecamp.com, and they look through the stuff there, if they're interested in it, they can contact you. Mm-hmm. And if there's not already a price on it, you'll quote them a price.
Oh, I will.
Yeah, you will. Because painters like to be paid.
We do like money.
Yeah, from, thing,
we love our art. We do, but
it's the same thing with authors. You know, they like to be paid.
There's nothing wrong with that. You know, if you're a creator, you're putting something into the world. You can love it and also hope to be compensated. Right. You know,
there's nothing more satisfying than to create something and then have somebody else love it. Mm-hmm. You know, and most of your work is for sale. There's probably a few pieces that are just more personal and they're not for sale, but most of
them. But
I
can be swayed.
Well, some of them are hanging on my wall and you know, they're not going to be swayed.
I don't know, Dad. You want me to move back in here?
Well,
Angela DeCamp moving into the Cutter's Notch Studios.
That I suppose that could happen someday, but
I hope not.
You'd have to go through your mother to make that happen. So at any rate, angeladecamp.com, and then the Facebook page is Angela DeCamp Artist.
Yeah, you just look up Angela DeCamp Art. If you try to add me as a friend and I don't know you, I will probably not.
Say no.
I'm very sorry.
You'll ignore it.
Yeah. But I would say like I if you really want quick, like the most up-to-date stuff, I would probably look at my social media before I would go to the website. The website, I usually have to have it photographed before I post it online. So
it's a little slower process.
Yeah, it's on there. It's nicer and neater. And I have links to like different YouTube videos I've done. But if you want like the immediate finished work, like I just posted one to Instagram and to Twitter last night. So those would be really good avenues.
And you don't do as much as you used to, but you also have some blogs. Right.
I know. I actually really want to try to, I was thinking about how to plan doing a few more of those. What I'd really like to do is what I've been getting into is not necessarily the blogging, but I'd really like to make more videos. Like I have these Painting with Angela videos that are also available on YouTube.
And I got to say, people love them.
Well, that's nice. Yes. I guess I'm entertaining enough. So, but I don't right now, I haven't posted very many of those. I tried to do another one, but I wasn't able to edit it because my computer is a little too out of date. It won't let me do anything anymore. So I'm saving my pennies. If you'd like to buy any of my artwork, that might actually help me. I'm saving my pennies to get a new computer and a new phone.
If they just want to donate money for your computer.
Really? Then. Yeah. If you don't love my art, if you hate my art, but you just want to see my videos, I'll still take your money. Just Venmo me.
There's an idea.
Yeah.
There's an idea.
That sound. I feel like I sound really greedy right now. I'm sorry.
Send me money though.
Give it. Maybe Santa will.
Well, let's do a little bit. Let's start to wrap this up a little bit. I appreciate you joining me as a guest and I'm looking forward to having you as a co-host in future interviews with other people. But let's do a little, let's do the
lightning round.
No, not lightning round. It's called the random question box.
Oh, okay.
So let's do a random question.
Oh, let me take a little look into this.
And we'll see what you come up with.
Giving it a little shake here. So I can be really surprised. Let fate decide what question I get.
Yeah.
Okay. I've got one in my hands. It's a very serious moment.
The suspense is
everybody
killing
me. Get excited. That's which superhero is your favorite and why? That's a tough one. I don't have a lot of favorite superheroes.
Well, it's good you don't have a lot of them. Then you should be able to narrow it down pretty quick.
That is really tough. I think probably my mom is over in the other room. She's like, pick me. Hilarious, Nancy.
Your mom is a superhero.
She is a superhero. I guess I don't have a good answer. How about you start? You tell me yours and I'll think about it.
This is my, you know, I'm interviewing you. I get to ask you the question. You can't just deflect it back.
Question. I don't want this question. I don't have a good answer for you.
You don't have a favorite superhero.
I don't, because you're my favorite superhero.
Maybe one of the Power Rangers.
No. I don't know. I guess I would probably say Athena. Yeah, because she is a Greek goddess, but I would consider that a superhero.
Okay, so that's a superhero from
Greek mythology,
2,000 years ago.
Yeah, well, she's still talked about today. That's more than what other people.
And you have a cat named Athena.
Yeah, I named my cat Athena.
Okay. Well, I guess my favorite superhero, since you asked the question.
Yeah, I did. I wanted you to answer. Yeah,
my favorite superhero is probably.
Don't say Captain America.
No, although he probably used to be in my
your youth,
middle school years. And my best friend at the time, Jerry's favorite was Spider-Man. In fact, we kind of went around, we kind of pretended that we kind of created our own superhero scenarios and personas. And I went with some guy who was like had rubber boots that could make you bounce like a super ball and stuff like that. And then he wanted to be Spider-Man, as I recall.
That's so fun.
I don't know. I gotta say I like Wonder Woman. I think she's pretty cool.
She is pretty cool. I wanted to say her, but I was like, that's too on the nose. I've picked another one, by the way.
Who's that?
I don't remember his name, but maybe somebody can like comment on your link or whatever and tell me. It was from All That, and it's Kanan Thompson played this superhero that was like, his only weakness was that he was lactose intolerant. So every time, like, he'd be like sprayed with milk and be like, no, like, and he'd kind of fall away. I wish I could remember the name of that.
All right.
Character.
All right. Everybody out in podcast world, if you can think of the name of Kanan Thompson's superhero character where he was lactose intolerant, send us a message.
That's probably my favorite, because just for nostalgia.
You can email me at author Michael DeCamp. @gmail.com.
Super dude.
No need to email
me. Sorry, don't do it now.
All right. So he was lactose intolerant. Yeah, that was his weakness.
Like, no, he's lactose intolerant. Somebody help him. And yeah.
I suppose maybe I like Iron Man because he kind of likes to smart off.
He's a dark horse.
Yeah, he's smart off. I don't know. I like Black Widow because she was played by Scarlett Johansson, and Scarlett's kind of pretty.
Yeah, she's all right. She's a little controversial, but she's okay. I really like Scarlet Witch, actually. If we're going in the Marvel universe, she's all right. Yeah. She's pretty powerful.
I like the Marvel universe. They made some great movies. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Well, I appreciate you joining us, and we'll close out with our theme scripture, which I introduced last time.
Right. See how well you can. You should do it in a different accent or something. You know, make it kick it up a notch.
Well, I'm not sure I can do accents.
Maybe that's don't do that. Don't try that.
That's not what I could do different voices and try like it. No, that's no fun. So Proverbs 22:29 says, "Do you see someone skilled in their work? They will serve before kings. They will not serve before officials of low rank." In other words, if you work hard at what you're gifted with, it will be noticed. Thank you for joining us on the Cutter's Notch podcast, and we will see you again very soon.
The Cutter's Notch podcast can be found through any podcast listing provider. New episodes will drop approximately twice per month. Connect with Michael at the following email address, authormichaeldecamp@gmail.com. Again, that's authormichaeldecamp@gmail.com. Abandon Hope, a Cutter's Notch novel, can be purchased as an ebook, paperback, or hardcover through any bookstore, both online and local. Get your copy and start your own Cutter's Notch adventure today.